Can you wear this? Okay, so now you
can. I can. You can make song.
Hello?
That's fine. This also makes song. Oh, that's true. Okay. Hare Krishna, Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Ram, Hare Ram, Ram Ram, Hare Hare. Thank you. ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय।
ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय।
ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय।
ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय।
ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। Hare Krishna. We completed the first chapter of Bhagavad Gita, observing the armies on the battlefield of Kurukshetra. So in the first chapter we have seen Dhritarashtra's enquiry about the activities of his sons Duryodhana and others, and also his brother's sons Pandavas. And Sanjaya responded, what's happening on the battlefield. He said that Duryodhan went to Dronacharya and mentioned that Pandavas have accumulated a lot of army, and he also mentioned the chief warriors on the side of Pandavas, and he also mentioned the chief warriors on his own side, and he compared the strength of both the armies, and to cheer up Duryodhan, who was actually a little fearful and anxious about the outcome of war, Bhishma blew his conch shell. Then later Arjuna, Krishna and all the other Pandavas and some chief people on the battle on the side of Pandavas, they all blew their conch shells. Then Arjuna told Krishna, please take the chariot in the midst of both the armies. I want to see who all have assembled on the battlefield to please the evil-minded son of Dhritarashtra. So war was about to begin, but Arjuna had some confusions and doubts and other concerns in his mind. Although he knows who have assembled on the battlefield in one sense, but still he was about to shoot the arrows and he wanted to see who have assembled on the battle. So Krishna, being Bhaktavatsala, he was playing the role of a chariot driver for Arjuna. He took the chariot in the midst of both the armies and he told Arjuna, Arjuna, look at these armies. Then Arjuna has seen everyone, the prominent people, and suddenly he was overwhelmed with compassion, kripa, and he started lamenting. So he gives various reasons why he cannot fight. First, Sanjaya describes Arjuna's various bodily symptoms of compassion. He was compassionate and he was exhibiting a lot of symptoms on his body. His limbs were quivering, his Gandiva bow was slipping out of his hands, and many other such symptoms. All this is due to his compassion. In fact, material compassion. He was thinking all these warriors to be Swajanam, my own people, my relatives. So that is based on bodily conception, which Krishna condemns in the second chapter. Then Arjuna also said that even if I become victorious in this battle, I won't be able to enjoy. Right? So he was fearing loss of enjoyment. Because one can enjoy even material pleasures in the midst of their family members. But in the battlefield, if Arjuna kills all these family members, how can he enjoy alone without the family members? Third reason. First reason was compassion. Second reason why he did not want to fight was his loss of enjoyment. He was not foreseeing any enjoyment in victory also. Thirdly, he was fearful of sinful reactions. If we kill our own relatives, then sin will overcome us. Although they are greedy, they are desirous of kingdom and wealth, etc. But we know the consequences of destroying a dynasty. How can we do this ghastly war? So, it will only create sin for us. So, he was fearful of sinful reactions. And fourthly, he was also concerned about the loss of family traditions. Okay. So, in the battlefield, if we kill so many warriors, then the family members of those warriors, they will be left alone, nobody will take care of them. And that will ruin their family traditions also. Okay. So, when Kulakshaya happens, then Kula Dharmas also will be destroyed. Then Kula Stris will be polluted. Then there will be Varna Sankara, or unwanted progeny. Okay. Then there will be no Pindadan and other oblations to forefathers. And ancestors also will fall down. Ultimately, those who caused the destruction of this dynasty, they will end up in hell. Okay. So, Jati Dharmas, Kula Dharmas, they will be devastated. So, Arjuna quoted these four reasons. We can observe in Arjuna's bodily symptoms and his words that these four reasons were there for Arjuna not to fight. Compassion, loss of enjoyment, fear of sinful reactions, and loss of family traditions. Okay. So, now, that is a quick summary of the first chapter. Now we will begin the second chapter. The second chapter is entitled Contents of Bhagavad Gita Summarized. Because in this particular chapter, we see that Krishna gives a brief description of Karma Yoga, Jnana Yoga, and a glimpse of Bhakti Yoga also. So these are the prominent episodes or sections of Bhagavad Gita. In Bhagavad Gita, Karma Yoga, Jnana Yoga, Bhakti Yoga are elaborately described. And Krishna gives a preview of all of them in this chapter, in the second chapter. That's why the title is Contents of Gita Summarized. Okay. And Krishna also presents an analytical study of matter and spirit, or spirit, soul and material body in this chapter. Very profound knowledge of the science of soul, which is presented directly by Krishna. We are able to hear all that in this chapter. And Krishna also describes the qualities of a sthita prajna, one who is situated in his intelligence. Fine. So these are the contents of this chapter. We'll discuss one by one. Now at the end of the first chapter, we saw that Arjuna was not inclined to fight. And Sanjaya was describing all this scene to Dhritarashtra. Okay. So Arjuna was not inclined to fight, and Dhritarashtra heard this and he became a little joyful. Oh, Arjuna was disinclined to fight? Means fight may not happen. Or my sons will become victorious. So that kind of small hope generated in Dhritarashtra's heart. Okay. As soon as he heard like that. So, but Sanjaya, seeing that Dhritarashtra was hopeful of not losing kingdom for his sons, he began to describe how Krishna would be inspiring Arjuna to fight. Although Arjuna was not inclined to fight in the end of first chapter, in the second chapter, Krishna will inspire Arjuna to fight. Sanjaya will describe this. Let's see what Sanjaya says. Sanjaya uvacha tam tatha kripaya vishtam ashrupurna kulekshanam vishidantamidam vakyam uvacha madhusudana tam tatha kripaya avishtam. So Krishna has seen Arjuna. Kripaya avishta means he was overwhelmed with compassion. Okay. It's mentioned in the first chapter also. Now in this chapter also it is being seen. Kripaya avishta means he was full of compassion. But this compassion is on a material plane, as Prabhupada explains in the purport. Tam tatha kripaya avishtam. Ashrupurna akulekshanam. His eyes were filled with tears. Vishidantam vishida means vishada. That is, he was lamenting. He was lamenting with tears in his eyes. Vishidantam idam vakyam uvacha Madhusudana. So, seeing Arjuna full of compassion with tears in his eyes and lamenting, Krishna spoke the following words. Clear? This verse says Arjuna is overwhelmed with three things. One, kripaya, compassion. Two, ashru, tears. Three, lamentation. Okay, that is vishidantam. Then Krishna started speaking. And Krishna is described as Madhusudana here. Uvacha Madhusudana. Krishna is called Madhusudana because he killed the king, he killed the demon named Madhu. Now Arjuna wanted Krishna to kill the demon of misunderstanding that has overwhelmed him. So Krishna is described to be Madhusudana. Krishna would be destroying the demon of misunderstanding that has overtaken the mind of Arjuna in performing his duty. What was the bewilderment about here? The bewilderment was about performing his duty. As a Kshatriya, he had the duty of fighting in the war. And the war was about to begin. War already began in one sense. But Arjuna was bewildered. Should he fight or not? You have assembled on the war, on the battlefield, and you are very indecisive whether to fight or not. So that was the situation of Arjuna. All this is because of kripaya, material compassion. Prabhupada writes, material compassion, lamentation and tears are signs of ignorance of real self. Compassion for the eternal soul is self-realization. Okay. So compassion on a spiritual platform is appreciated in our scriptures and demonstrated by so many exalted devotees. But compassion on a material plane is not very much appreciated in spiritual circles. Okay. Even if someone shows some compassion on the material body of other people, if he is a devotee, then that he is actually having compassion on a spiritual plane, and to facilitate for the spiritual progress of people, he may do something for their material welfare also. Okay, but ultimate compassion is supposed to be compassion on a spiritual plane more than the material plane. Prabhupada gives an example. Compassion for the dress of a drowning man is senseless. When the person is drowning in the ocean, we can't just pick up his coat. Okay, he'll take the coat, I have protected his coat. What will you do with the coat? So the person is drowning. Similarly, this body is also like a coat on the soul. So the compassion has to be on the soul, on the person, not just his body. That's the prominent theme that Krishna emphasizes throughout this chapter, especially in the next section, that is verse number 11 to 30. These 20 verses describe the science of soul. We'll come to it very soon. So Prabhupada writes, this chapter instructs us in self-realization by an analytical study of the material body and spiritual soul, as explained by the supreme authority, Krishna. Let's see what Krishna says, right in the beginning. Krishna is beginning to speak now. First time, Sri Bhagavan Uvacha is coming in Bhagavad Gita. Shri Bhagavan Uvacha.
Shri Bhagavan Uvacha.
Kutastva Kashmalamidam.
Kutastva Kashmalamidam.
Vishame Samupasthitam.
Vishame Samupasthitam.
Anarya Jushtamasvargyam.
Anarya Jushtamasvargyam.
Akirtikaram Arjuna.
Akirtikaram Arjuna.
He says, Kutastva Kashmalamidam. Where have this Kashmala means compassion? Or impurity. Where have these impurities come upon you, my dear Arjuna? Vishame samupasthitam. Vishama means in this hour of crisis. Vishama paristhiti means it's a very emergency time. Okay, yeah, Arjuna is not relaxing in his house. Whether to fight or not, he was not just thinking in such a relaxed mood. It's an emergency. He has already taken decision that he is will be fighting in the war, and war began. Conscience also were blown, and he also picked up his bow and arrows. He was about to shoot, then he was bewildered. Right? So, Vishame Samupasthitam means in this hour of crisis, in this critical moment where your performance is expected, your mind went into some thought, some doubt, some confusion, bewilderment. This is not expected. Okay, Vishame Samupasthitam. Now you just sat for the exam, you already have the hall ticket, and your entire academic year has passed. These are the final exams, you just sat for the exam, and you are bewildered, should I write the exam or not? So it's really, then you have to perform that exam in just next 2 hours or 2.5 hours, whatever may be the time allotted. So at that time, if someone gets into confusion, then he will just fail in the exam. Okay. So, Vishame Samupasthitam. And what kind of impurity is this? Krishna says, Anaryajushtam. Next word is Anaryajushtam, means it does not befit a civilized man. Arya means a civilized man who values liberation. Anarya means uncivilized man. You are supposed to be Arya. Such great Kshatriyas are called Aryans. But you are behaving like an Anarya. Second, Aswargyam. This kind of mentality will not take you to Swarga or heavenly planet or higher planets. So it doesn't cause elevation to higher planets. It only causes degradation. Aswargyam. Akirtikaram, not only that, it will cause infamy, my dear Arjuna. Akirtikaram Arjuna. Three things Krishna said. Number one, Anaryajushtam. Two, Aswargyam. Three, Akirtikaram. It is uncivilized behavior. It doesn't cause elevation to higher planets, and it will lead to infamy. Next. We'll discuss the next verse also and then discuss the, both the purports together. Klaibhyam. Klaibhyam asmagama partham. Naitatvayi upapadyate. Kshudram hridaya dorbalyam. Yaktvottishtaparantapa. Klaibhyam masmagama partha. O partha, O son of Pratha. Klaibhyam, give up this degrading impotence. Klaibhyam means impotence or cowardice. Okay. Give it up. Naitatvayi upapadyate. It doesn't suit you at all. You are a valorous kshatriya, a warrior, a popular warrior. Very famous personality who could impress even Shiva and Indra also. For such a person, getting into this confusion in the beginning of the war doesn't suit at all. Right? Naitatvayi upapadyate. Kshudram hridaya dorbalyam. This hridaya dorbalya, this weakness of heart. What is the weakness of heart here specifically? His so-called compassion or magnanimity or non-violent nature at this stage is the weakness of heart. So, when a demon wants to kill innocent people, that is his weakness of heart. But when a kshatriya does not want to kill in a religious battle which is authorized by the Supreme Lord, then that is his weakness of heart. Sometimes killing is weakness of heart, sometimes not killing is weakness of heart. Basically, according to one's duty, we are supposed to do some things at some time. We are not supposed to do some things at some time. For example, a doctor, a surgeon, he goes into the operation theater. The scissors and knives are given to him. You cut the abdomen of somebody and then do some operation there. And then he says, I cannot cut. I have to be non-violent. I cannot see blood. I'll be compassionate on this patient. I will just go away. I cannot cut, and then he, when you cut, then again you have to stitch the body, and he will be painful, he will feel the pain, and for 10 days or 20 days or 1 month he has to be bedridden. I can't see all that. I'll just go away. If the surgeon feels like that, that is hridaya dorbalyam only. So Arjuna is actually like a surgeon here. He is doing surgery on behalf of Krishna by killing all these miscreants. Okay. So that is the hridaya dorbalyam. This so-called magnanimity or non-violence is hridaya dorbalyam. Petty weakness of heart. Tyatva, give it up. Uttishta, get up. Parantapa, oh chastiser of enemy. Where Krishna specifically uses this word parantapa, means you are the chastiser of enemy. You are supposed to be giving up this kind of degrading impotence. Get up, rise, start fighting. So these are the two verses that Krishna just spoke. Okay. Let's get into the purport of Prabhupada and then discuss this in more detail. First, Prabhupada elaborates on this word Sri Bhagavan Uvacha. Bhagavan means the possessor of opulences. Bhagavan. So Krishna possesses all six opulences in full. What are the six opulences? All wealth, strength, fame, beauty, knowledge and renunciation. All these opulences Krishna possesses 100%. That's why he is called Bhagavan. And only Krishna can claim this. No other living entity, including great demigods like Brahma and Shiva, also cannot possess opulences as much as Krishna. Okay. So, and it is also confirmed in Brahma Samhita, Srimad Bhagavatam and many other Vedic scriptures that Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Vadanti tat tattva vedaha tattvam yajnanam advayam brahmeti paramatmeti bhagavan iti shabdyate. Bhagavan. The Lord is described to be Bhagavan in Srimad Bhagavatam. Krishnastu Bhagavan Svayam. Krishna is directly the Supreme Personality of Godhead, the possessor of all opulences. So that's very clearly mentioned. So Prabhupada elaborates on this part of Krishna being the Bhagavan or possessor of six opulences. Ishvaraha Paramah Krishna Satchidananda Vigraha. There are so many controllers, Ishwaras, but Krishna is a Parama Ishvara. Ishvaraha Paramah Krishna. He is the controller of all controllers. He is the best of all controllers. Okay. So, and Prabhupada also quotes, Ete chamsa kalah pumsaha krishnastu bhagavan svayam indrari vyakulam lokam ridayanti yuge yuge. Okay, Krishna is directly the Supreme Personality of Godhead and he incarnates into this world whenever the demons overwhelm the devotees, defeat the devotees or the demigods. Okay, like that there are so many such verses in our Vedic literatures and even within Bhagavad Gita also that prove that Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Krishna himself says, Mattaha parataram nanyat kinchidasti dhananjaya mayi sarvam idam protam sutre maniganaiva. There is no one superior to me, there is no one equal to me, everything is dependent on me. Aham sarvasya prabhavo mattas sarvam pravartate iti matva bhajante mam buddha bhava samanvitaha. Everything is emanating from me. Name vidhu suraganaha prabhavam na maharshayaha. No one can know me. I am the Adi. Aham adirhi devana maharshinam cha sarvashaha. I am the Adi of this entire creation. I am the Adi or origin of all the demigods and the sages. Like that, there are several verses within Bhagavad Gita also that prove that Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And in Bhagavad Gita, whenever Krishna spoke some verses, it is mentioned Sri Bhagavan Uvacha. When Sanjaya speaks, it is Sanjaya Uvacha. When Arjuna speaks, it is Arjuna Uvacha. When Dhritarashtra speaks, it is Dhritarashtra Uvacha. But when Krishna speaks, it is Bhagavan Uvacha. Sri Bhagavan Uvacha. Because he is the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Bhagavan. In the third shloka, which we discussed already, the meaning is discussed already. So, in the third verse, Krishna said, it doesn't befit you. It is not suitable to you. Naitatvai upapadyate. Prabhupada elaborates on that. The son of a kshatriya who declines to fight is not actually a kshatriya. Just for namesake, he is a kshatriya. Similarly, a brahmana, if he acts impiously, he is brahmana for namesake. He is not an actual brahmana. Right? So, a brahmana, kshatriya, vaishya, all of them are supposed to exhibit certain qualities. Then only they are accepted in that position. Okay. So Arjuna is a kshatriya, but he is not manifesting the behavior of a kshatriya in this context. So that's why Krishna says, this kind of behavior doesn't suit you, my dear Arjuna. You are parantapa. You are the killer of enemies. How can you behave like this? So Krishna considered this sort of magnanimity to be mere weakness of heart. The magnanimity or compassion of Arjuna on a material plane is a weakness of heart. But this chastisement did not immediately inspire Arjuna to get up and fight. Although Krishna said, Kyatva, Uttishta, Parantapa, give it up. Give up this degraded impotence. Get up and then start fighting. You are Parantapa, chastiser of enemies. But Arjuna did not get up. Arjuna did not feel inspired to just give up this weakness of heart and start fighting. He is presenting further confusions. And from the fourth verse, he says, Arjuna uvacha, katham bhishma maham sankhye, dronam cha madhusudana, yushubhihi pratiyotsyami, pujarhau arisudana, katham bhishmam aham sankhye, in this war, katham, how can I counteract bhishma, my dear Krishna? And Dronam cha Madhusudana. Drona. Bhishma is my grandfather. Drona is my teacher. How can I counteract them on the battlefield? Is it proper? How can I counterattack them? Is it proper? And you are Madhusudana. Why he used the word Madhusudana? Krishna is the killer of Madhu demon. Okay. And we'll discuss after completing the next two lines also. Ishubhi pratiyotsyami. Pujarhav Arisudhana. He says, my dear Krishna, Ishubhi means with arrows. Pratiyotsyami, counter-attacking. How can I counteract or counter-attack my teacher and my grandfather with arrows on the battlefield, oh my dear Madhusudhana and Arisudhana? Pujarhav means they are worthy of worship. Bhishma and Drona are worthy of worship. I have to worship them as my elders, my teachers, my grandfather. So you are called Madhusudana. You are called Arisudana. Means you have killed a demon named Madhu. Arisudana means you are the killer of enemies. You never killed Sandipana Muni, who is your guru. You never killed, Ugrasena, your grandfather. You did not kill your grandfather. You are asking me to kill my grandfather. You did not kill your guru, Sandipana Muni. You are asking me to kill my guru, Dronacharya. How is it justified? You are Madhusudana, you are Arisudana. You are not grandfather Sudana, you are not guru Sudana. Right? So how can you ask me like that? So, this was the argument of Arjuna. Seniors are always respectable. Even if they chastise us, a younger person has to tolerate it. He's expected to tolerate, even if the seniors become a little harsh. Okay? So it's a general etiquette that the younger person is supposed to be a little mild and tolerant. Okay? So even Krishna will injure only enemies, not his own grandfather and teachers. How can he inspire Arjuna to say, get up and fight? Okay? Tyaktvottishta parantapa. How can you say this to me? Okay, Arjuna is responding back. So, but Arjuna forgot another point. It's not just that one should not kill a senior person on the basis of his seniority or elderliness only. If the senior person is behaving like a demon or taking side of demons or taking side of adharma, then one can counterattack. Krishna has killed Kamsa, who was his uncle. Okay. He is Arisudana, correct. He is Madhusudana, correct. But he is also Kamsa Nishudana. That point Arjuna did not point out. Shishupal was his relative. So Arjuna is concerned that how can I kill relatives? I can only kill enemies or demons. But Krishna killed his relatives also. If their behavior is not proper, they are on the side of adharma. Okay. So one should not go with the bodily conception or some sentimental or emotional relationship with other people. One should actually see the standard scriptural quotes. What is dharma, what is adharma? One should conduct oneself based on this dharma and adharma and not just based on bodily relationships. That's what Krishna is trying to convey to Arjuna. That will come a little later. Now, Arjuna further says, Guru na hatva hi mahanubhavan Shreyo bhoktum bhaikshamapi haloke Hatvartha kamamstu gurun ihaiva Bhunjiya bhogan rudhira pradigdhan Gurun ahatvahi mahanubhavan. O mahanubhava, this, my gurus or my superiors like Drona and Bhishma, they are mahanubhava, they are very great souls. Okay, gurun means guru is not just a teacher, guru can also be superior. In that sense, Bhishma is also guru for Arjuna. He did not say one guru only, gurun, plural. So how can I kill my superiors? Okay, gurun ahatvahi, ahatva means not killing. I should not kill them. So without killing my superiors, shreyo bhoktum bhaiksham api haloke, better I beg. Bhaiksham means begging. So bhoktum, whatever I get by begging, I will eat that and live. Okay, shreya, that is better. Shreyo bhoktum bhaiksham api haloke, haloke in this world. So better I live by begging than to kill great souls, my teachers and superiors, gurun. Hatva arthakaman to gurun ihaiva bhunjiya bhoga rudhira pradigdan. Though they are desiring worldly gain, arthakaman means they are just desiring some material gain. Even if the superiors desire some material gain also, we should not kill them, he says. So if they are killed, everything we enjoy will be tainted with blood and the sin of killing gurus. Rudhira pradigdan. Rudhira means blood. So, on a sentimental platform, in one sense, Arjuna was giving this kind of reason. However, he says, they are my superiors, they are my teachers, they are my gurus, they are my elders, they are my superiors. I should not kill them. Okay. But a teacher who does an abominable action and has lost all discrimination is fit to be abandoned. Prabhupada writes. So, Bhishma and Drona, they took the side of Adharma. They took the side of Duryodhan. Of course, at heart, they are not willingly taking the side of Adharma. But at least externally, they were obliged to take the side of Adharma. So Krishna will reward Bhishma considering his heart later. But considering his action, Krishna has to kill Bhishma also through Arjuna. Kill or whatever. Just send arrows through Arjuna. So, there is a disapproval of the external action. But Krishna never disowned Bhishma considering his heart. So, Krishna does both simultaneously. So, that is Krishna's deep compassion and mercy upon his devotees on a spiritual plane. Arjuna's compassion in this context was on a material plane. But Krishna is actually compassionate and kind towards all the people on the battlefield. Is he not compassionate? He is God. And all the people assembled there are the parts and parcels of Krishna. They are his amshas. Mamai vamsho jiva loke. All these are my amshas. But because they have done something mischievous, they are on the side of adharma, I am supposed to give them some punishment as it is appropriate. Okay. But at heart, Krishna never disowns any of them. Okay, so next, Arjuna is sentimentally accepting them to be superiors, ignoring their, taking side of adharma. But Krishna has a different thought process. Sixth verse, Arjuna is presenting his compassion, his confusion. Nachaitadvidmaha katarannogariyam.
Nachaitadvidmaha katarannogariyam.
यद्वा जयेम यदि वा नो जयेयुः ज्ञानेव हत्वा न जिजीविषामः तेव स्थिताः प्रमुखे धार्तराष्ट्राः. Can someone read the translation?
Nor do we know which is better, conquering them or being conquered by them. If we killed the sons of Dhritarashtra, we should not care to live. Yet they are now standing before us on the battlefield.
So Arjuna is giving, he is presenting his confusion further. I do not know which is better, conquering or being conquered. When you are sitting on the battlefield, you are supposed to have a clear thought process. I should conquer the enemy, right? That's the thought process or the mentality of any warrior who is on the battlefield. But Arjuna is not deciding here. Should I conquer them or being conquered by them? How can that kind of confusion be there in a warrior who is on the battlefield? For example, Vritrasara, he is also having a very clear thought process. I have to be conquered by Indra. Vritrasara came for the fighting only to be defeated or killed by Indra's thunderbolt. No doubt about it. He is clear in his mind. And Arjuna came to the battlefield without a clear thought process. Okay. So, should I conquer them or should they conquer me? If we kill the sons of Dhritarashtra, we should not care to live. Because without them, we cannot enjoy. Because they are relatives. We have to show off in front of relatives. We discussed it elaborately in the previous chapter. Yet they are standing on the battlefield. It's a little erratic statement. You cannot find out some very logical flow in this statement. Okay. But basically, Acharyas give this simple explanation for this verse. 4 points. So, 4 thoughts are bothering Arjuna. Number one, should I dutifully fight and risk unnecessary violence? Number two, should I refrain from fighting and live by begging? Number three, anyways, victory is not certain. Means even if I fight, I may not get victory. Four, even if I become victorious, even if victory is certain for me, there will be no enjoyment. Because we cannot live happily without relatives. So victory or no victory, fight or no fight, he is unable to just come to a conclusion. Okay. Should I dutifully fight and risk, should I fight or should I not fight and live by begging? That's, should I fight or not fight? First 2 points. Number two, whether I become victorious or get defeated, I don't see any enjoyment. Okay. So victory is not certain anyways. And even if I become victorious also, I cannot live happily without my relatives. Okay, they are there in Subodhini also. Got the points? Number one, should I fight and risk unnecessary violence? Number two, should I refrain from fighting and live by begging? 2 thoughts. 2 more thoughts. Victory is anyways not certain. And even if I become victorious, fourth is, even if we become victorious, we cannot live happily without relatives. Okay. So these 4 things are bothering Arjuna. They are pulling Arjuna in 4 different directions. So he is unable to come to a decision. Prabhupada mentions all this in the purport. So Prabhupada writes in the second half of the purport, all these considerations by Arjuna definitely proved that he was a great devotee. So from one sense, if you consider Arjuna's role as a Kshatriya, Arjuna is confused, bewildered. But if you also consider Arjuna's position as a nice, great devotee, you should see his heart filled with compassion or detachment. He is willing to forgive even Dhritarashtra, Duryodhan, Dushyasan, Shakuni, Karna. All these people have tried to kill Pandavas in various ways, insult them, and take away their kingdom, what all they have not done? They were all six kinds of aggressors. But Arjuna is willing to forgive all of them for what they have done. He is willing to detach himself from the kingdom and even live by begging. That shows Arjuna's detachment. That shows Arjuna's forgiveness. Okay. So that's a very nice quality that Prabhupada is appreciating here. Okay. But from a Kshatriya perspective, good, we appreciate your kindness. But because you are playing the role of a Kshatriya, you are not supposed to show this kind of kindness. Instead, you are supposed to counter-attack these people who have done some harm to you. It's not a personal insult for you. Because of them, so many people are getting affected also. So we should take an action here. Okay. So, but how do we do that? Although it's not there in this context, I'll share. Basically, we should not have any grudges towards the other person whom we may have to punish according to the time, place, circumstances. So, dutifully one may have to administer some punishment towards a wrongdoer. But at heart, there should not be any grudges or hatred towards the other person. Okay. So, punishment is bona fide. But if the people are not punished or they are not given the necessary reaction for what they have done, but they will never be able to learn only. That's why this whole system of karma is there and people are going to hell, heaven, going to lower species, upper species, this and that. Why Krishna has created this system? Krishna could have been compassionate to everyone. Oh, okay, fine, whatever you do, I'll take all of you to spiritual world. Krishna has compassion. At the same time, he also wants to punish the people who behave in a very unmentionable manner. Okay, that's why he has created this whole system of transmigration, punishment in hell and all that. All this is meant to rectify the rebellious attitude of the conditioned soul who goes against righteous behavior. But Arjuna is little overwhelmed by that compassion on a material plane. But nevertheless, that soft heart, although it is described to be weakness of heart earlier, but the softness of that heart is appreciated also in this context. Oh, you are willing to forgive, fine. That is noble. That's great on your part. But maintain this forgiving attitude, but also do the needful to rectify their mentality. You have forgiven them at heart, but you also correct them. Okay, you should also correct them so that they come to proper behavior. That's what is the teaching in Vaishnava circles. Does it make sense? So, Prabhupada writes, he was truly virtuous as these qualities combined with his faith in the words of instruction of Krishna, his spiritual master indicate. It is concluded that Arjuna was quite fit for liberation. Unless the senses are controlled, there is no chance of elevation to the platform of knowledge, and without knowledge and devotion, there is no chance of liberation. So Arjuna had all these qualities. Now in this context, in this great confusion, which Arjuna expressed in the 6th verse, where Arjuna's intelligence got bewildered in the matter of discharging his duty, dharma, he is taking shelter of Krishna. So Arjuna will humbly submit himself in front of Krishna as a disciple, seeking his guidance. Arjuna says, Karpanya dosho pahata svabhavaha
Karpanya dosho pahata svabhavaha
Prichhamitvam dharma sammoodha chetaha
Prichhamitvam dharma sammoodha chetaha
Yashreyasyan nishchitam bruhitanme
Yashreyasyan nishchitam bruhitanme
Sishyastehaṁ śyādhimāṁ tvāṁ prapannam Karpanya dosho pahata svabhāvaha. He says, Karpanya dosha. Because of my miserly weakness, hata svabhāvaha. I have become so afflicted, overwhelmed. Prichhāmi tvāṁ, I am asking you, dharma sammūḍha cetāha, in a state of bewilderment about my own dharma, my own duty. I have bewildered in the performance of my duty. In this context, I am inquiring from you. my dear Lord. Miserly weakness, bewilderment in duty. Karpanya dosha and dharma sammoha chetaha. Please, I am asking you. Yaha shreyasyan. What is good for me? Nishchitam bruhitanme. Please speak that for certainty. Tell me for certain what is good for me. Yaha shreyasyan nishchitam bruhitanme. Sishyasteham. I have become your sishya, your disciple. Shadhi mam tvam prapannam. Please instruct me. I have become surrendered to you. Prapanna means surrendered. Okay. So I have become surrendered unto your lotus feet, my dear Krishna. So just instruct me. Shadhi means instruct. Please instruct me as a disciple. So far they were friends. Arjuna and Krishna were friends. But in the fight, in the war, Arjuna took the position of a warrior while Krishna took the position of a chariot driver. Krishna just took a lower position, very humble position in front of Arjuna. But when Arjuna was bewildered, Krishna is taking a higher position as guru. Earlier friend, equal. Okay. Second, as a chariot driver, as a servant. Now guru, superior. So Krishna is changing gears like anything. He is playing different roles in his relationship with Arjuna. Okay. So whatever my devotee needs, I will do the needful. Okay. Krishna is not having any reservations. Either to play the part of Arjuna's friend, or Arjuna's chariot driver, or Arjuna's guru. I want to serve my devotee. I want to please my devotee. I want to help my devotee. I am a well-wisher of my devotees. Okay, that is Krishna's main role. Rest all are detail. Okay, he can change gears like anything. So by nature's own way, the complete system of material activities is a source of perplexity for everyone. So when perplexities come in life, one has to take shelter of a spiritual master. Samsara dava nalalidha loka tranaya karunya ghanaghanatvam. Okay. So the miseries of the material world are like raining. It's raining outside now. So clouds are raining water. Similarly, the material nature will rain miseries. Threefold miseries. To protect oneself from these miseries, which are as good as forest fire, one should take shelter of a spiritual master, who can enlighten us in spiritual knowledge, transcendental knowledge, and bring us close to Krishna. And Arjuna's fortune was that Krishna himself is directly acting as his spiritual master, guru. Okay, that is Arjuna's fortune. So, but everyone may not have that fortune, but one can receive similar fortune by surrendering to a representative of Krishna. Okay. So, especially Prabhupada says, especially a human being is supposed to understand his precarious situation in this world and surrender to a guru, a spiritual master who can enlighten him in transcendental knowledge. Karpanya dosha means kripana, a miserly person, although he has human life, he does not utilize it properly. Okay. So a human being who is intelligent, he utilizes the human life properly and take shelter of a spiritual master. So just like Arjuna is taking shelter of his spiritual master Krishna. 8th shloka. Nahi prapashyami mama panudyat yat shoka muccho shanam indriyanam avapya bhuma vasapatna vriddham Rajyam Suranam Apichadhipatyam Nahi Prapashyami Mamapanudyat. So my dear Krishna, I cannot see any means to drive away this grief that I am experiencing now. Nahi Prapashyami, I cannot see. Mamapanudyat yet shoka muchoshanam indriyanam. This shoka, this lamentation is drying up my senses. Uchoshana means drying up. Indriyana means senses. Yet shokam uchoshanam indriyanam, this is just drying up my senses. Okay. He says, avapya bhumav asapatna vruddham. Although I become victorious and gain supreme sovereignty in the entire earthly planet without any rival, unrivaled kingdom and sovereignty. And not only that, rajyam suranam apichadhipatyam. Even if I win sovereignty over the heavenly planets of demigods also, still I cannot get any means to drive away this grief. This grief is overwhelming me. Even if you give me heavenly kingdom also, I cannot come out of this grief. So, now Prabhupada again writes, a guru has to be approached to solve such kind of perplexities. Now, Arjuna was very knowledgeable. Arjuna is very experienced. He travelled so many places, he met so many people, he has gathered a lot of knowledge. But Prabhupada says, he could understand that his so-called knowledge was useless in driving away his problems, which were drying up his whole existence. And it was impossible for him to solve such perplexities without the help of a spiritual master. Okay. Academic knowledge, scholarship, high position, etc. are all useless in solving the problems of life. Only a spiritual master like Krishna or a representative of Krishna can solve the perplexities of life. And who can be such a spiritual master? Whoever knows the science of Krishna can be a spiritual master. Kibha vipra, kibha nyasi, sudra kenenai, ye Krishna tattva veta sei guru hai. Whoever knows Krishna tattva, the Supreme Lord Krishna, his position as Bhagavan, his energies, his internal energy, external energy, marginal energy, how they function, what is this material nature, what is jiva, all these tattvas, if one understands, then he can become guru. Okay. Even if he is born as a Shudra, that is not a disqualification for such a person to become a guru. Sat sat karma nipuno vipro mantra tantra visharadaha avaishnavo gurur nasyad vaishnavah svapacho guruhu. An avaishnava or a non-devotee, one who is not a devotee of the Supreme Lord, he cannot become guru. But one who is a devotee of Vishnu or Krishna, he can be guru even if he is born in a Svapacha dynasty or a dynasty of dog eaters. Fine. So Prabhupada quotes all these beautiful verses in this purport. So Prabhupada finally he says, if we want to curb lamentation for good, then we have to take shelter of Krishna as Arjuna is seeking to do so. So Arjuna, even in his bewilderment also, he is giving us a lesson, what we are supposed to do. We are supposed to take shelter of a guru in bewilderment. That's the message that Arjuna is giving. Even in his bewilderment, means great souls give important lessons for us on what to do and what not to do, even by their mistakes also. Okay. But Arjuna is put into bewilderment by the will of Krishna so that we learn all these lessons. Okay. So Dhritarashtra must have been glad to know that Arjuna is not going to fight. He was so overwhelmed and he was thinking that my sons could get the kingdom. But Sanjaya disappointed him by speaking the ninth verse. Sanjaya uvacha eva muktva harshikesham gudha kesha parantapa nayotsya iti govindam uktva tushnim babhuvaha evam uktva hrishikesham. Okay, like Krishna, Arjuna spoke like this to Krishna, who is Hrishikesha. Gudha kesha parantapa, and Krishna, Arjuna is described to be Gudakesha, Krishna is described to be Hrishikesha. Because Arjuna is Gudakesha because he conquers sleep. We discussed it in the previous verses also, previous chapter also. So Arjuna is also described to be Parantapa, He is the chastiser of enemies. So that's the chastiser of enemies told Hrishikesha, Govinda, I shall not fight. He fell silent. Na yotsya iti Govindam. Oh Govinda, I will not do yuddha. Na yotsya. Okay. So uktva, he spoke like this. Tushnim babhuvaha. He just fell silent. So Arjuna is described as Parantapa by Sanjaya here, just to indicate that although he is not willing to fight, he is ultimately the conqueror of enemies. Definitely he will conquer your sons, my dear Dhritarashtra. Understand this. Like that. So next, Arjuna has several qualifications to receive spiritual knowledge. Just whatever we have discussed in Bhagavad Gita so far also tells us how Arjuna is qualified to receive spiritual knowledge. Shama and Dama. So Arjuna had complete control over his senses and mind. In the first chapter, 32nd verse, we have seen Arjuna is so detached. He had full self-control. He can even go and beg on the streets. And he was totally indifferent to enjoyment. Even if you give me 3 planetary systems also, I cannot, I don't want them. Okay, he said that in the first chapter, 35th verse. In 1.32 and 35, we saw that section of verses where Arjuna speaks about no enjoyment even if he become victorious or even if he get heavenly planets. So that shows Arjuna's self-control and detachment. And in this verse, 2.5, in this chapter, second chapter, 5th verse, he said, Guru Nahatvahi Mahanubhavan. So that also shows Arjuna's ability to tolerate dualities. Whether I become a king or whether I lose and become a beggar, it doesn't make difference to me. He was able to tolerate. And in 2.7, he also showed his Shraddha or faith in the instruction of Krishna. So Arjuna's self-control, detachment, tolerance, and faith in Krishna. These 4 are Arjuna's qualifications to receive the knowledge of soul. Clear? In Subodhini you can see, all these are mentioned. 10th sloka. Tamuvacha Hrishikeshah Prahasan Iva Bharata Senayor Bhayor Madhye Vishidantam idam vachaha Tamuvacha Hrishikeshah. So in this way Krishna, Arjuna spoke to Krishna. Prahasan Iva Bharata. Then what is Krishna, Hrishikesha is doing? Prahasan, he is smiling. Okay, he is simply smiling when Arjuna spoke like this. Senayor Ubhayor Madhya, in the midst of both the armies, this Hrishikesha spoke to Arjuna, Gudhakesha, who is Vishidantam, who is into lamenting. So, to the grief-stricken Arjuna, Krishna spoke with a smile in the midst of both the armies. That's the meaning of this verse. Why Krishna is smiling here? Because his friend Arjuna has accepted the position of his disciple, a Sishya. So he smiled seeing that. Okay. So, and he is also called Hrishikesha. Krishna is called Hrishikesha because previously, as Hrishikesha, Krishna controlled the words of Arjuna out of love for him. Now he became the controller of Arjuna's mind, again out of love to benefit Arjuna. So how Krishna controls Arjuna's mind? By speaking to him. Sankhya philosophy, jnana, or the knowledge of body and soul. We'll see that in the next section. Okay, in the next class or after some gap, we will discuss that. Thank you. Hare Krishna.
Break.
Can you increase the volume?
My throat is a little bad.
I think you understand this. Kshatriya spirit. Many times actually we will be seeing Arjuna in Ashwatthama scripture also. You know, their compassion sometimes is little more.
Compassion, not passion.
Compassion. In Ashwatthama scripture also Arjuna show compassion. Here also he showed compassion. Even there are many kings also. They use some name of compassion. If you see the history of India, many kings, they become compassionate to the outside rulers and gave them shelter, like, you know, we are not thinking of what will happen in the long term. So it's always the Kshatriya Dharma goes down or like, you know, as a devotee is okay, but when you are ruling the whole India, whole world, then how it is so difficult to think of some compassion to someone. Again, the same for Ashwatthama field, Parikshit Maharaj. And we can understand on one bhakti point of view. Another point is always there. They are
some materialistic kings.
Kings also.
Also show compassion.
They also show compassion. How Mughals attacked because of
I that. Don't know much about it. But one possibility could be. You can ask some experience people, I don't know. There is an ego associated with the Kshatriya. So showing compassion or kindness or protecting someone also could be Vali Maharaj is there. I have to give charity for 10 lifetimes, whereas I'm only 3 steps. So there is some kind of majesty and royalty, regalness is the show.
Mm-hmm.
It could be so, I'm not sure. You can ask someone else.
Parikshit Maharaj, thank you. Parikshit Maharaj also fully.
Hey, Parikshit Maharaj actually cornered Kali. Parikshit Maharaj, it's a little out of topic, but still we'll discuss it. Parikshit Maharaj tried to avoid Kali by giving him the places where four regulative principles are broken. That was his first. He wanted to kill Kali. Okay, so. Then Kali took shelter of Parikshit Maharaj. Second, Kali said, okay, I'll not kill you, you get out of my kingdom. So it's also a Kshatriya principle that whoever surrenders unto a Kshatriya should not be killed, even if it is Kali. So that's why Kali is spared. But you cannot live in my kingdom. Then Kali said, wherever I go, that's your kingdom only. You should give me, if you have given me shelter, you should give me some place to stay in your kingdom. Then third installment, he says, stay at places where four regulative principles are broken. Then Kali again says, these places do not exist in your kingdom only. Give me some other place. Fourth installment, he gave gold. Wherever gold is there, you stay. Okay, because if you have lot of wealth, that might inspire people to break four regulative principles. Okay. Then also, Parikshit Maharaj was obliged to give him that place. But Parikshit Maharaj used all the wealth and gold in his kingdom for Krishna conscious activities. That way, Parikshit Maharaj practically made Kali residenceless. And he ruled like that for a while. Then suddenly the Shamik Rishi incident has happened. That too by will of Krishna. Because although the devotee is powerful enough to even stop Kali or stop the next season or next age, still by Lord's will they have to happen. Because you may be powerful to stop monsoon, you may not, but he may be powerful to stop monsoon, but monsoon has to come in June. May is over. You can't continue summer for next four more months. Trimester. 4 months is trimester. 6 months is semester. Anyways.
But isn't it a little self-defeating that they, you know, abide by these rules and these rules catch them then later on?
That is the case in Vedic culture.
Mm. They're
it's fine. That's an enjoyment in self-defeat also. So, it sometimes happens. It is self-defeat, of course. It could be self-defeat. It's okay. They're okay with it. Hare Krishna. So we'll begin the next section. So in the first 10 verses of the second chapter of Bhagavad Gita, we have seen Arjuna's further doubts and confusions, and Krishna also chastised Arjuna, and Arjuna expressed his further doubts and confusions, and Arjuna accepted Krishna as the spiritual master. Now Krishna begins to respond. From 11th verse onwards till 30th verse, Krishna gives his teachings on the perishability of material body and eternality of spirit soul. Okay. This section can be called Sankhya or Jnana. Sankhya means analysis of matter and spirit, or analysis of body and soul. Body is matter, spirit is soul. Fine. So Sankhya is analysis of body and soul. And you can also call it Jnana or Atma Jnana, to be more specific. Atma Jnana means knowledge about the soul and body. Okay. So, now Arjuna had these concerns. Mainly, initially he was being compassionate to his relatives on a material plane. And Krishna addresses that first concern of Arjuna now. Understand, they are not material bodies. They are spirit souls. Fine. So let's see. 11th verse. Shri Bhagavan Uvacha.
Shri Bhagavan Uvacha.
Ashochyananvashochastvam.
Ashochyananvashochastvam.
Prajnavadamscha bhashase.
Prajnavadamscha bhashase.
Gatasunagatasumscha.
Gatasunagatasumscha.
Nanushochanti
panditaha.
From this verse, Krishna describes the science of soul, and the essential message of this 20 verses, 2.11 to 2.30, the essential message or the gist of these 20 verses is only one thing. That is, soul is eternal, body is temporary and perishable. So, you should just do your duty of fight without lamentation. Okay. Give up unnecessary lamentation and compassion based on material bodily conception. Just understand that the spirit soul is eternal and material body is perishable. Just fight. Do your duty. That is the essence of this entire section. So, first Krishna says, Ashochyan Anvashochastvam. Ashochya means not worthy of lamenting. Anvashochastvam, you are lamenting for something which is not worthy of your lamentation. Okay. Prajnavadamscha bhashase. And you are speaking as if you are a learned person, pandit. Prajna, you have a lot of prajna. If you think or you speak as if you are very learned, but you are mourning for something which is not worthy of your grief. Gatasun agatasumscha na anushochanti panditaha. Pandita means wise. Wise people do not lament for gatasum or agatasum. Means asu means life. Gatasum means life is gone, means dead. Agatasum means living people. So wise people do not lament for either the dead people or living people. So the wise lament neither for the living nor for the dead. And you are lamenting. Okay. So this is not very wise on your part, my dear Arjuna. So earlier, if you remember, we discussed in the first chapter that Arjuna argued based on Dharma Shastras. According to Artha Shastra, Artha Shastra is politics and sociology. According to Artha Shastra, these aggressors, there are six kinds of aggressors, you remember there? So these aggressors are supposed to be killed according to the philosophy of politics and sociology. But according to Dharma Shastra, that present religious principles like compassion, forgiveness, so based on that Dharma Shastras, we should not kill even the aggressors. Clear? Arjuna presented this argument. But Krishna presents a superior argument that is based on Jnana Shastra. You understand the knowledge of matter, spirit and the controller of both. That is called Jnana Shastra. Jnana. Jnana, Jnana. Okay. Arthashastra is politics and sociology. Philosophy of politics and sociology that recommends punishing sinful people. Okay. Dharma Shastra is philosophy of religious principles that is based on forgiveness and compassion even towards sinful people. But Krishna presents something superior. You don't either become violent based on politics or you become sentimentally non-violent based on sentimental compassion or bodily conception. You understand Jnana. That is knowledge of matter, soul and the supreme controller of both. That is even greater. So what is that Jnana speaking to us? What is that real knowledge? So this is a combination of three things. Number one, soul, which is spiritual. Number two, gross body, which is made of earth, water, fire, air, ether, which is material. Number three, subtle body, which is made of mind, intelligence and ego. That is also material. This is subtle material body, there is gross material body. So, the spirit soul is covered with two types of material bodies. One is subtle, one is gross. Now, this gross material body will anyways die. It will be destroyed. It is changing at every moment and it will be destroyed. No doubt about it, it is inevitable. Number two, subtle body, it cannot be destroyed till you get liberated. So although the gross body is destroyed, the subtle body is not destroyed. So within the subtle body, so many material impressions are there. And they will carry the soul to the next gross body. Fine? So the subtle body cannot be destroyed when the gross body is destroyed and the gross body can anytime be destroyed. But the subtle body, subtle material body also can be destroyed when one gets liberation. And there's a lot of time for it, for ordinary conditioned souls. So, and what is the remaining thing? Soul. Soul can never be destroyed. Soul is eternal. There is no death for the soul. So gross body will anyways be destroyed. Subtle body cannot be destroyed when the gross body is destroyed. Then third, soul is eternal. So what are you lamenting for? Are you lamenting for gross body? Are you lamenting for subtle body? Are you lamenting for the soul? So there is, it's not worth lamenting for any of these three things. So ashocha nanvashochastvam. So the wise do not lament neither, wise lament neither for the living nor for the dead. Prajnavadamscha bhashase gatasu nagatasumscha nanusochanti panditaha. Pandita will not lament. So this is the first instruction that Krishna gives. So knowledge means, jnana, knowledge means knowledge of matter and spirit or soul and body and the controller of both. M, matter, S, soul or spirit. Then C, controller of both. MSC they say. So, 12th verse. Natvevaham jatu nasam.
Natvevaham jatu nasam.
Natvam neme janadhipaha.
Natvam neme janadhipaha.
Nachayvana bhavishyamaham.
Nachayvana bhavishyamaham.
Sarve vayamatah param.
Sarve vayamatah param.
Natve vaham jatu nasam. Never was there a time when I did not exist. Okay, natve vaham jatu nasam means there was never a time when I, Krishna, did not exist. Krishna says, Paramatma. Second point, natvam neme janadhipa. There was never a time when you did not exist, and there was never a time when these kings did not exist. Means, me, you and all these kings, All these three parties existed always, eternally. There was never a death for us. We always existed. So the eternal individuality of the soul is emphasized in this verse. All individuals exist eternally. Third line, Krishna says, Na chaiva na bhavishyamaha. Nor in the future, sarve vayamatah param, shall any of us cease to be. Means we always existed till now, in the past and present, but in future also we will continue to exist. Okay? So there is no death for any of us. So now very interestingly Prabhupada says that Krishna always existed and will always exist and is existing. And the souls, either all these kings or even Arjuna, all of them existed always. Does it mean all of them are one? No. Just because Krishna is eternal and you are eternal, Krishna and you are not same. The quality of being eternal is same for a living entity and God, but that does not make God and living entity same. Both are nitya. Nityo nityanam chetanas chetananam eko bahunam yo vidadhati kamam. So although Krishna is eternal and the living entities are also eternal, Krishna is the supreme eternal, the source of all other eternals. Okay, so one should not lose that discrimination. So quoting 12th verse, one cannot say that God and living entity are same. There is similarity in their quality of being eternal, but there is no similarity of their quantity of being powerful. Power is not same. Qualities are not same. Qualities means the 64 qualities. Chatushashti kala prapurna. Talents. Power, energy, they are not same. But both are eternal. In that sense, the quality is same. So both are Sachidananda. Okay. Fine. Now Prabhupada writes in the purport that one point, that living entity and the Supreme Lord are not same, although they both are eternal, qualitatively same, but quantitatively they are different. So Prabhupada elaborates on this point by quoting this verse, Nityo Nityanam Chetanas Chetananam. So, and he also mentions little bit about Mayavadis and all. 13th verse. So before going to 13th verse, we will try to see what could be the response of Arjuna hearing this verse. In the last two verses, Krishna said, do not lament unnecessarily, all individuals exist eternally. That's what he said in the last two verses, right? In the 11th verse, he said, do not lament unnecessarily. In the 12th verse, he is saying, all individual souls existed eternally, will exist eternally. Now, Arjuna might argue, although the soul is eternal, but the body is related to the soul, and thus becomes an object of affection. Soul is eternal and the body is related to the soul, and you are affectionate to the body also. And all my relatives who are connected to that body are dear to me. So when their bodies perish, I will lament. You tell me don't lament. But I have to lament. You are telling me to lament based on the argument that their souls are eternal, their bodies are perishable. But their bodies are connected to their souls and I am attached to them through those bodies, so I am lamenting for the loss of their bodies. Arjuna gave a powerful argument. Then Krishna says, Dehinosmin yatha dehe Kaumaram yavanam jara Tatha dehantara praptir Dhiras tatrana muhyati Dehino asmin yatha dehe. That's foiling my throat. You can increase the volume. or we can wait for a while till the rain subsides. Morning Bhagavatam class also the speaker was experiencing the same thing. He stopped for a while.
Dehinosmin yatha dehe kaumaram yavanam jaram tatha dehantara praptir dhirastatra namuhyati dehinosmin yatha dehe. Dehi means, deha means body, dehi means one who is the possessor of this body. Or the embodied soul is called Dehi. Okay. Dehino asmin yatha dehe means in this deha or in this body, the embodied soul continuously passes. Okay. Kaumaram yavanam jara. Kaumara means childhood. Yavanam means youthhood. Jara means old age. So the embodied soul continuously passes through various stages within one body also. You are changing, you are thinking about the change of bodies or death of body, but a spirit soul passes through different stages of one body also. Okay, at the child, in the childhood, somebody has a small body. Anyone can lift that child, who is a 1 year old child, 2 year old child. But when the child grows, the child stands on his own. Okay, child's weight increases, height increases, bodily structure grows. So the spirit soul, embodied soul, is constantly changing body within one lifetime also. Okay, tatha dehantara praptir, similarly deha antara, the soul leaves one body and enters another body. Dhiraha tatra namuhiyati. A dhira, a sober person, an intelligent person, a knowledgeable person, does not get bewildered by this change of bodies. Change of body is so natural. From birth till death, from kaumara till jara and till mrityu, your body has changed so much. So your body changed and you change body also, similarly. Right? So why should you get bewildered? So dhira is a person who is very sober and perfect in knowledge, right? And in fact, you should rejoice the change of bodies. Because once somebody leaves the body and enters another body, he gets a new body. Okay, just like you have your laptop, which is very old now. The laptop has a new stage. And after using it for 10 years, it will get old and you get a new laptop and you are excited with it. Okay. Similarly, the soul changes bodies and one will have to rejoice the change of body. Especially these great souls like Drona and Bhishma, they are very noble souls. If they change their bodies, if they give up these current bodies, they will definitely get better bodies. Because they are great people. They may get heavenly bodies, not earthly bodies. They may get spiritual bodies also. You should rejoice their change of body. Why should you lament? Now Arjuna has an argument. Yeah, I accept your argument of rejoicing the change of bodies, but I am attached to their current bodies. Okay. So, yeah, they may get a new body which is better, new, strong, fresh and greater. But I am attached to their current bodies. So I am attached to this current body of Bhishma and Drona. They are my grandfather and teacher. So I am attached to their current bodies. So how can I not lament in separation from their current bodies? Because their current body is the medium through which I am interacting with them. The medium of my interaction with these beloved superiors is no more there, will not be there anymore. So my mind is burning up because of this lamentation. Then Krishna says, you have no option. You may be attached to the current body, but you cannot continue to interact with that person through this current body only. What is the solution? Tolerate. Krishna says that in the 14th verse. Matrasparshastu Kaunteya.
Matrasparshastu Kaunteya.
Sitoshna Sukhadukhadaha.
Agama
Payino
Nityaha.
Tamstitikshasva Bharata. Matrasparshastu Kaunteya. Matrasparshastu means the senses come in contact with the sense objects. Okay. O Kaunteya, O son of Kunti, senses experience the sense objects. And because of this sense perception, what will happen? Sitoshna sukha dukha daha. The person experiences Sita and Ushna, heat and cold, Sukha and Dukha, happiness and distress. So these dualities of Sukha and Dukha and Sita and Ushna occur because of sense perception, because of senses coming in contact with sense objects. Okay? But we need to understand Agama, Apayino, Anitya. They come and they go and they are temporary. What should we do? Tam stitikshasva Bharata. You should learn to tolerate these dualities, my dear Arjuna. Tolerate these temporary dualities. So, you want to interact with your relatives through their bodies and you are unable to tolerate when they are getting separated from those bodies. There is no other way. You have to tolerate. You must tolerate. So, one has to execute one's duty despite the pain and pleasure that comes by executing that duty. One may feel sometimes very happy by doing his duty. Sometimes one may not be very happy doing something. But if it is his duty, one has to do it. One cannot avoid the duty. For example, Prabhupada gives two examples in this purport. Very simple and beautiful examples. He says, a mother will cook in the kitchen, both in winter and summer. So in winter, staying close to the fire is very nice. But in summer, very hot, May, April, like that in India. So when it is too hot, then it's not very comfortable to cook, sitting in front of the fire. But still, a selfless mother does it and feeds her children. Right? And similarly, a spiritual seeker or a sadhaka takes early morning bath. And some very strict sadhakas, they may even take cold water bath also in the month of Magha, Prabhupada writes in the purport. Even in the midst of chilling winter, they take bath in that cold water. That is their sadhana. So they have to tolerate. Now, very important point, we have to tolerate the dualities that is mentioned here. Sita and Ushna, we tolerate. We make arrangements to tolerate. As soon as winter is coming, we purchase sweaters or shawls and mufflers and monkey caps and then protect ourselves from that cold. Okay? And if it is summer, you have your fans on, you have your coolers, ACs, this and that. Okay? So you drink cold water, you don't drink hot water in summer. So Sita and Ushna, the human being makes organized arrangements to handle these dualities of heat and cold. But is there any organized arrangement to handle the dualities of Sukha and Dukha, happiness and distress? That is also important. So this heat and cold are tolerated on a physical level. But happiness and distress are tolerated not externally but internally, on a mental level. So, we need to understand that tolerating happiness and distress is also important, and if not more important for a spiritual seeker at least, or any average human being. So, we should learn to tolerate happiness and distress also, not only heat and cold. Okay? Prabhu Krishna makes this very grave point here. So, now, if one can learn to tolerate that happiness and distress internally, then such a person is eligible for liberation, otherwise not. Very beautifully Krishna says in the next verse, yam hi navyathayantyete purusham purusharshabha samadukha sukham dhiram somrutatvaya kalpate yam hi navyathayantyete purusham purusharshabha. Oh, best of men. Purusharshabha means best of men. A purusha or a person who is not disturbed. Navyathayanti eti means one who is undisturbed and equal, sama. Dukkha sukham dhiram means one who is undisturbed and equal in happiness and distress. Such a person is dhira, he is patient. And so amrutatvaya kalpate, he is the person eligible for amrutatva, means liberation. Mrityu is death. Okay. Amrita means no death. That is liberation. Immortal. So a person who can learn to tolerate the dualities of happiness and distress is certainly eligible for liberation. You should learn to tolerate the distress of separation from your relatives. You have to understand it. It's as a matter of duty, you may have to fight with your own relatives, and in that fight, if your relatives die, you should learn to tolerate it. You did your duty religiously, authorized way, you have done your duty. So, such a person is eligible for liberation. Krishna did not include heat and cold here. They are very petty, they are an external plane. In the previous verse, he said Sitoshna Sukha Dukha, and in this verse, he took only Sukha Dukha, he did not include Sita and Ushna. Did you notice that? Because it's easy to be easy to tolerate heat and cold, but it is not easy to tolerate sukha and dukkha. That's more important, especially for spiritual seekers to cultivate, for sadhakas. So following one's dharma is very important, and in that execution of one's unavoidable duty, if there is happiness or distress, one should learn to tolerate it. And by such tolerance and equanimity, one is eligible for liberation. Otherwise not. Is it clear? These two verses are very important verses of this chapter. Of course, there are many other important verses also. Anyone who is steady in his determination for the advanced stage of spiritual realization and can equally tolerate the onslaughts of distress and happiness is certainly a person eligible for liberation. The difficulties usually arise from having to sever one's material family relationships, Prabhupada writes. Okay. But one has to at one point overcome all that bodily conception and material affections. Okay. And start looking at people and things from a spiritual perspective. Yes, this person is my brother or sister or husband or wife or mother or grandmother or father or grandfather, etc. But more than their being my relatives, they are spirit souls. Amshas are parts and parcels of Krishna, servants of Krishna. If one can learn to connect with other people based on that spiritual connection, not just based on the material connection of family relation, then such a person is eligible for liberation. Okay, this is the grave message of Bhagavad Gita, which Krishna repeatedly gives. Because this happiness and distress, these dualities in certain relationships, they come and go. Agama, apayino, anitya. Anitya means not permanent. Chitragata Maharaj gives this example. Gives this verse in his talk to Mother Parvati. What is sukha and dukkha? What is svarga and naraka? What is blessing and what is a curse? What is a shapa and what is anugraha? All are manifested by the material nature. They are so temporary and feeble in nature. Just like there is ripples on water, the volume of water that you see at one place will not stay there on a flowing water body. It will just continue. It will just go away. And the water will go high tide, low tide, high, low, high, low. So the volume of water that goes up will not stay up forever. It will go down. And it will, again it will come up. You see the surface of a flowing water body, especially in monsoon, you can see very clearly. You go and stand in front of any pond, any small rivulet, you will see all that. Right? So, life is flowing, like the water is flowing in a river, in a flowing river. So, we are like floating objects on that floating river, flowing river. We are like floating objects on a flowing river. The river of material nature is flowing, and the floating objects, the living entities, are sometimes coming together, sometimes getting departed. Naikatra priya samvasaha suhurdam chitra karmanam oghena vyuhamananam plavanam srutaso yatha. This is a verse from 10th canto, 5th chapter, that comes from the conversation between Vasudev and Nanda Maharaj. They both love each other so much. They are friends. They are brothers. They both are fathers of Krishna. Okay. But they cannot stay together because Kamsa was there. Not only Kamsa, of course. Vasudeva is meant to stay in Mathura because of his Aishwarya Vatsalya. And Nanda Maharaj is meant to stay in Vrindavan for his Kevala Vatsalya. Anyways, that rasa discussion we'll have later. But point is, although they are brothers and they love each other, they cannot stay together. In that context, this verse comes. Naikatra priya samvasaha suhurdam chitra karmanam. Chitra karma means everybody has a unique baggage of fruitive reactions. Karma means the destiny or the reaction that I am supposed to receive or experience in my life is unique for me only. And for someone else, it is something else. For someone else, it is something else. Chitra karmanam. Everybody has a unique and wonderful way of karma, how their life is being handled. Because of the chitra karma, two people may come together, stay there, stay together for a while, and after some time they may get departed. Just like floating objects, you see, you put two twigs on our Yamuna river here. Just put, go to Yamunotri and put two twigs and they will flow together. And go to Keshighat and see, are they together? Go to Brahmandghat and see, are they still together? They will just get separated. So, similarly, because of my karma, I happen to be in this body, in this situation, in this geographical location, in the midst of these people. And similarly, because of their karma also, they happen to be here. And we both happen to be staying together for so and so amount of time in this situation, with this relationship, for this much time. After that karma, that particular reaction got exhausted, then that person goes in a different line and I go in a different line. We all had classmates in our kindergarten, first standard, second standard, third standard. Where are they? How many of those names do you remember till now? Who is your closest fifth standard friend? Even if you know his name, can you connect with him now? Or even if you happen to meet him now, how much subject matter do you have to discuss with him? Do you recognize him, or does he recognize you? Or how inspired are you to reconnect with them? 10 standard friends, plus 1, plus 2 friends, so many other people like that. Relatives also, there are few relatives who are close, but there may be 100 relatives whom we see once in 4 years or 10 years also. Some distant relatives are there, they will see us in our childhood, and they will see after we are 35, again. Are 30 saal pehle dekha tha tumko, kaisa hai? They will come and say. So, like that, the union of two living entities in this world is so temporary. Why should you be so overwhelmed with it? Okay, tolerate. Agama apayino anitya tam stitikshasva bharata. Then, if you are sama dukkha sukham dhiram, so amritatvaya kalpate. If you learn to tolerate both happiness and distress with an equal vision, then you are eligible for liberation. But if you are too elated by material happiness, if you are too discouraged by material distress, then there is no question of liberation. One should have equanimity. One may be affected to a certain degree, but one should learn to see it equally. They will just come and go. So slowly, gradually, one should transcend that platform of getting too overwhelmed or affected by happiness and distress on a material plane. And that is possible only when we cultivate higher taste in Krishna consciousness. Krishna says that in this chapter only later. Parandrishtva nivartati. A small child gets bothered whether I should take a blue doll or red doll. That's a big decision in his life. A 5-year-old child, for example, you give him two dolls. So it's a big duality in his mind. Which one should I take? And for an elderly person, he is not bothered about it. You give him two toy cars, blue car and red car. Child gets different. I will want this, I want this. Sometimes he will take this, sometimes he will take that. Sometimes he will say, I want both. Sometimes I don't want both, I want a green car. He will say like that. That's a big decision for a small child. But for his father, who is trying to decide, take original car. Should I take green car or blue car or red car? He has to make a decision. He has to spend 10 lakhs to purchase that car. But this child has to spend 10 rupees to purchase these cars. That is his decision making. And he is overwhelmed with that decision making. That's a big lifetime achievement for him. If he can manage to pay that 10 rupees and then purchase that green car for his enjoyment. But for his father, purchasing that original green car by paying 10 lakhs is an achievement for him. But for a pure devotee who is close to Krishna, whether it is original car or duplicate car, both are duplicate only. You understand? So for him, this father's decision making of purchasing green car and red car is also silly for a realized devotee. Ultimately, you cannot stay in that car for a longer time. Yes, that has some utility. But there is more in life than that. Okay? So you are constantly bombarded with the decision making of good or bad on a material plane only. When will you transcend this material plane and then get into spiritual plane where everything is good only, there is no bad. So only on material plane there is something good and something bad. On a spiritual plane there is everything good. So does anyone get this question in his mind or in her mind that can we just have only good things in life? And can we not just avoid this making decision or choices of which is good, which is bad? Why can't everything be good? Why things have to be good and bad both? Because in this material world, there are materially good things and materially bad things. If you go to spiritual plane, there is nothing bad there. Everything is good. Everything is enjoyable, relishable, joyful. On spiritual plane also there is meeting and separation between the Lord and His devotees. Both are good. Both are spiritual. Both are blissful experiences. On this material plane, meeting and separation are not very spiritual. You meet beloved ones, you feel happy. You get separated from beloved ones, you feel distressed. You meet your enemies or people who don't like you, there is unhappiness. You get separated from those enemies, you are happy. But on a spiritual plane, a devotee and the Supreme Lord meet or get separated. There is only happiness. There is no duality there. Samadukha sukham dhiram. On a material plane also, if you become oblivious to happiness and distress, then amrutatvaya kalpate, overcoming dualities, is a prominent message of Bhagavad Gita. It comes multiple times. tolerating dualities and being equipoised in the midst of dualities. Fine, 16th verse. Nasato vidyate bhavo.
Nasato vidyate bhavo.
Na bhavo vidyate sataha.
Na bhavo vidyate sataha.
Ubhayorapi drishtontaha.
Ubhayorapi drishtontaha.
Tvanayostatva darshibhi. Nasato vidyate bhavo. Na bhavo vidyate sataha. So the meaning of this verse is simple. Na asato. Asata means non-existent or false or temporary in this context. So what is that? Material body. That is asat. For the asat material body, there is no permanent existence. Next. Na bhavo vidyate sataha. Sata means, sat means spirit soul here. For the spirit soul, there is no change. So for the material body, there is no permanent existence. For the spirit soul, there is no change. Is it clear? Okay. So, ubhayorapi drishtontaha tvanayos tattva darshibihi means, people, tattva darshi means the seers of truth. Tattva means truth, darshi means one who sees. Tattva darshi means the seers of truth realized this conclusion that the body has no permanent existence and the soul is eternal. Fine. So the body changes at every moment by actions and reactions of different cells. But the soul remains changeless throughout. Okay. So Prabhupada writes in the second paragraph, this is the beginning of the instruction of the Lord to the living entities who are bewildered by ignorance. Removal of ignorance involves re-establishment of eternal relationship between the worshipper and the worshipable, and the consequent understanding of the difference between the part and parcel living entities and the Supreme Lord. So these are the important aspects of one's knowledge. Understanding spirit, understanding matter, understanding the Supreme Lord, understanding the minute part and parcel living entity. Okay. So, actually, Prabhupada writes here, and Acharyas write together, both the soul, but the soul remains the same despite all changes of body and mind. The soul actually does not have a relation with the subtle and gross material bodies and their products, like lamentation and bewilderment. Because of this material body, there is sense perception, lamentation, bewilderment, etc. But the soul actually is not connected to all this. Only because of ignorance and misidentification of the soul with the body, there is all this lamentation. The soul misidentifies with the material body, then there is lamentation, there is duality, there is bewilderment and all that. When the misidentification is not there, then there is nothing bewildering to the soul. So that's why a liberated soul is compared to an old coconut. You see, there is coconut. Inside coconut, there is pulp. The pulp is very strongly attached to the shell. You know, there is a coconut of green covering. Inside that there is brown fiber. Inside that there is a hard shell. Inside that there is white coconut pulp. Inside that there is coconut water. So when the coconut becomes very dry, then the inside pulp becomes disconnected from the shell. You can do like this and then hear the sound. Similarly, the external material body, which is like the coconut shell or coconut whole covering, that experiences a lot of bewilderment and lamentation, happiness, distress, etc. But when the soul is connected to Krishna and disconnected from the material body, that soul doesn't experience all this on the material plane. Okay. So, and only that relation is there because of the misidentification with material body. Yes, Prabhu.
So, what is the cycle? Is it the ignorance first and then misidentification, or is it misidentification first and then ignorance?
Both are same. Misidentification is ignorance. Or misidentification is due to ignorance. And because of our ignorance, we misidentify with the body and our ignorance increases. Okay. Both are interrelated and...
We are a spiritual spark, you know, spirit soul. How we got contaminated, you know, like we are in spiritual world, we came to this material world, correct?
Yes. This is an eternal question. Let's not try to dwell on this now. What I can say is, it doesn't matter whether you are there or never there, whether you are always here and trying to go there, whether you came from there and then trying to go back there. Your process is simple, bhakti yoga, and your destination is fixed, Krishna loka.
Because I am conditioned right now, because I have this material body, because I am conditioned. Unless and until I don't have gross body, I will not perform any action and I will not get a karma. So how this simple became? Soul, if I
am not having any gross body to perform any action. That's what Prabhupada says. In fact, this kind of discussion is banned in ISKCON also. Okay? There is no conclusive answer to this question. How did I develop an independent mentality disconnected from Krishna? Who can say? Prabhupada always says in many of his purports, since time immemorial, we have disconnected ourselves from Krishna, something like that he writes. And a more intelligent question is, how do I go back there than how did I get here? That's what Prabhupada says. Okay, I don't know much about that. And in fact, many people discussed on this and then they said, okay, we should not discuss on this anymore. That's what, na? Okay. So many people ask this question, very standard question, but it's okay. We can relax on that part. 17th verse. Avinashitu tadvidhim yena sarvamidam tatam vinasham avyayasyasya nakaschit kartumarhati. Avinashitu tadvidhi. My dear Arjuna, understand that soul is avinashi. Avinashi means indestructible, imperishable. Tad vidhi, understand this. Yena sarvamidam tatam. The soul is pervading throughout the body. Vinasham avyayasyasya nakaschit kartumarhasi. No one can destroy that imperishable avyaya soul. Okay, Krishna makes the same point. That is, soul is indestructible. The soul which pervades throughout the body is indestructible. Okay. And Prabhupada in this purport quotes some verses. Balagrashata bhagasya, keshagrashata bhagasya, all this. And he says that there is an indication of the measurement of the soul. Take a tip of hair and divide it into 10,000 parts. And that one part is the size of soul. Okay, how do you exactly measure it? And God knows. So, in one sense, soul is immeasurable. You cannot get the dimensions. The influence of such a spirit soul is spread all over the body. Although the soul is so minute, but still, the influence of the soul, which is consciousness, is spread throughout the body. So when someone cuts the hand, you feel the pain because consciousness is there and that consciousness is coming from the soul. Okay. So, 18th verse. Antavanta ime deha.
Antavanta ime deha.
Nityasyokta hasharirinaha.
Nityasyokta hasharirinaha.
అనాశినో అప్రమేయస్య తస్మాద్ యుద్ధస్వ భారత అంతవంత ఇమే దేహ మీన్స్ ద మెటీరియల్ బాడీ ఈస్ పెరిషబుల్ నిత్యస్య ఉక్తాః శరీరిణః మీన్స్ ద ఎంబాడీడ్ సోల్ ఈస్ ఎటర్నల్ నిత్య శరీరి మీన్స్ వన్ హూ హ్యాస్ ద శరీర దట్ ఈస్ సోల్ సోల్ హూ ఈస్ ద పొసెసర్ ఆఫ్ ద మెటీరియల్ బాడీ ఈజ్ నిత్య ఎటర్నల్ అండ్ దేహ ఈజ్ పెరిషబుల్ ఇట్ ఈస్ నాట్ ఎటర్నల్ అనాశినో అప్రమేయస్య ద సోల్ ఈస్ ఇండిస్ట్రక్టబుల్ అండ్ ఇమ్మెజరబుల్ తస్మాత్ యుద్ధస్వ భారత Therefore, fight, O descendant of Bharata, fight. So, Krishna urges Arjuna like this. Okay. Prabhupada writes in the purport, There is no cause of lamentation because the living entity as he is cannot be killed, nor can the material body be saved from saved for any length of time or permanently protected. So you can save the material body for some time. Means as long as you are destined to stay in that material body. But once the tenure of the soul within a material body is completed, the soul will leave that body. The body is just again is merged back into the material elements. The body which is made of earth, water, fire, air, ether will again be dissolved into that, either by burning or cremation or whatever. 19th verse. Yaenam vetti hantaram yaschainam manyate hatam ubhautau na vijanito నాయం హంతి నహన్యతే యేనం వేత్తి హంతారం యశ్చైనం మన్యతే హతం. సో ప్రపోజ్ రైట్స్ వెరీ నైస్ రైమింగ్ ట్రాన్స్లేషన్ హియర్. నేదర్ హీ హూ థింక్స్ ద లివింగ్ ఎంటిటీ ద స్లేయర్ నార్ హీ హూ థింక్స్ ఇట్ స్లేన్ ఈజ్ ఇన్ నాలెడ్జ్ ఫర్ ద సెల్ఫ్ స్లేస్ నాట్ నాట్ ఈ స్లేన్. బేసికల్లీ The soul doesn't kill and the soul doesn't get killed. Nityam nayam hanti na hanyate. The soul does not kill anyone, nor the soul is killed by anyone. That's the meaning of this verse. If you think the soul can kill someone, or if you think that the soul can be killed by someone, you are not in knowledge. Okay? You are not a knowledgeable person, he says. So the size of the soul is 1/10,000th of the part of tip of hair according to Shvetashvatara Upanishad. So the spiritual atom is so small than the material atom. Where is the question of killing that minute spiritual atom with material weapon? It's not possible. Okay. Now Krishna speaks a very important verse. న జాయతే మ్రియతే వా కదాచిన్ నాయం భూత్వా భవితా వా న భూయః అజో నిత్యః శాశ్వతోయం పురాణో న హన్యతే హన్యమానే శరీరే న జాయతే మీన్స్ ద సోల్ నెవర్ టేక్స్ బర్త్ Mriyate va kadachin, the soul never dies also. No birth, no death for the soul. Nayam bhutva bhavita va na bhuyaha. The soul has not come into being, does not come into being, will not come into being. Means, it's not that the soul will, soul has a beginning either in the past or present or in the future. The soul is eternal. There's no question of its being present or it's coming into being either in the past or present or in the future. Aja means the soul is unborn. Nityaha means eternal, shashvata, ever existing, everlasting. Purana, very primeval. Na hanyati hanyamani sharire. When the sharira, when the body is killed, the soul is not killed. Is it clear? So this is the science of soul. In summary, 20th verse. There are so many nice verses describing the science of soul. But the 20th verse describes multiple qualities of the soul. The soul never dies. Fine. The body undergoes six changes, namely birth, existence, growth, producing some byproducts, dwindling, and death. So these six changes are not there for the soul. The soul does not undergo these six changes. Prabhupada writes in the purport. That's why soul is called kutastha, means changeless. It does not undergo the six bodily transformations. Prabhupada quotes similar verses from Kathopanishad in this purport. There also, na jayate mrete va vipaschin, that is mentioned. Then, this consciousness of the soul is different from the consciousness of the Supreme, because the Supreme Consciousness is all knowledge, past, present and future. The consciousness of the individual soul is prone to be forgetful. Now, the symptom of the soul is consciousness, but the consciousness is prone to forgetfulness, if it is the consciousness of the individual soul. But for the Supreme Personality of Godhead, His consciousness is never overwhelmed by forgetfulness. Okay, so like that. 21st sloka. Veda vinashinam nityam.
Veda vinashinam nityam.
Yaenam ajamavyayam.
Yaenam ajamavyayam.
Katham sa purusha partha.
Katham sa purusha partha.
Kam ghatayati hantikam.
Kam ghatayati hantikam.
Veda, understand. Avinashinam nityam. Avinasha means it is indestructible. Nityam, eternal. Krishna is repeating the same things again. Ya enam ajam avyayam. Ajam means unborn. Avyaya, inexhaustible. Katham sa purushaha partha. If the soul is inexhaustible, the soul is indestructible, if the soul is eternal, if the soul is unborn, katham sa purushaha partha kam ghatayati hantikam. How can someone kill the soul? How can someone be killed by someone? Okay, it is not possible. Okay, how can anyone kill the soul or cause anyone to kill? So it is impossible. So you are unnecessarily lamenting. None of these people will die. But all of their bodies will go away. If you don't kill, someone else will kill. If no one kills, by nature only their body will die. Okay? So one should not lament unnecessarily for it. So the essential point is, there is no need to get lamentation. No need to be lamenting for this. Prabhupada writes, everything has its proper utility, and a man who is situated in complete knowledge knows how and where to apply a thing in its proper utility. Why Prabhupada is saying this? Because Prabhupada is describing the utility of violence. Violence also has its utility in establishing dharma, in maintaining dharma. People are disturbing a dharma, they are getting adharmic, such people need to be punished. For that you need to have violence. Either the person has to be killed or punished in some manner so that he can give up that adharma and then he come to a proper process of dharma. Okay, so violence has its role. And Arjuna is sentimentally saying that I will become non-violent. And Arjuna, Krishna doesn't approve that. Fine. Next, 22nd sloka. Vasamsi jirnani yatha vihaya.
Vasamsi jirnani yatha vihaya.
Navani grihnati naroparani.
Navani grihnati naroparani.
Tatha sharirani vihaya jirnani.
Tatha sharirani vihaya jirnani.
Anyani samyati navani dehi.
Anyani samyati navani dehi.
Krishna gives an example how the soul changes bodies. Earlier Krishna said that in the 13th verse, the soul passes through boyhood, youthhood, and old age and death. Now Krishna is giving an example of how the soul changes the bodies from one body to another body. Within the body there were changes, and there is a change from one body to another body also. How? Vasamsi jirnani. When the vasa, when the cloth becomes very old, yatha vihaya, you just give it up. Navani grihanati naroparani. Once you give up the old cloth, you take up a new cloth. Okay. Jirna, it's done. It has become old now. So tatha sharirani vihaya jirnani. Similarly, just the way you give up your old clothes and take up new clothes, similarly, you give up old material bodies and take up new material bodies. Anyani samyati navani dehi. Nava means new dehi. Deha is body. You give up old bodies and accept new bodies. So this is inevitable change of bodies. Prabhupada writes, even the modern scientists who do not believe in the existence of the soul, but at the same time cannot explain the source of energy from the heart, have to accept continuous changes of body which appear from childhood to boyhood and from boyhood to youth and again from youth to old age. Okay. The super soul fulfills the desire of the atomic soul as one friend fulfills the desire of another. Why at all one has to change these bodies like one changes clothes? Because there are material desires within. The more material desires are there within the heart of a conditioned soul, to fulfill those desires, that soul has to take up more and more material bodies. Someone has to take, someone has the desire to eat a lot of meat. The human body may not allow eating of so much meat. Then he is given the body of a ferocious animal. Then that soul will get a lot of opportunity to eat a lot of meat. So like that, depending on the, that's one example. Similarly, depending on one's activities within this body, one's next bodies will be decided. Depending on the desires that we maintain within this body, our next body will be decided. Just like somebody is studying in a college. Okay. So his performance and his interests on certain subject are in a certain manner. For example, he scores 80% or 90% good score, and he has some favoritism towards say chemistry. Okay. Then he will get into chemical engineering because of his interest and his performance. Okay. So he may have interest in chemical engineering, but in chemistry he got 20%. He may not enter into chemical engineering. He may enter something else. Some people will enter mechanical engineering, some people will enter electrical engineering and all that. Some people will do MBBS. So everybody will begin with kindergarten. A, B, C, D, first standard, second standard. And they will have some subjects, mathematics, science, history, then what else? Moral science sometimes. Like that, there are some common subjects that the children study up to say 10th standard. Then they are given an option. You will go to MPC, BIPC, HEC, CEC. You see, when you come to plus 1, plus 2, there are multiple options. Then, after completing plus 1, plus 2, you have more multiple options. You want to go to this engineering, that engineering and all that, medicine. And then it will be more refined. So depending on the inclinations of the student and the performance of the student, his next academic year will be decided. Is it not? Similarly, depending on our own consciousness in this lifetime, the next body will be decided. Okay. So, although they are friends, okay. And why this kind of desires are overwhelming a conditioned soul? Prabhupada writes, forgetfulness of his relationship by the atomic soul is the source of one's changing of his position from one tree to another, or from one body to another. The jiva's soul is struggling very hard on the tree of material body, but as soon as he agrees to accept the other bird as the supreme spiritual master, that is Krishna, then the subordinate bird immediately becomes free from material lamentation. Now, the super soul and the soul are considered to be two birds on the same tree. Body is the tree is the material body. So you know this example. So if one takes shelter of the Supreme Lord, then he need not change bodies. Means did not change trees. Fine. 23rd verse. 23rd, 24th and 25th. In these three verses, Krishna gives so many qualities of the eternal soul. Not exactly qualities, how the soul cannot be killed. He gives so many ways in which body can be killed, but in which soul cannot be killed. And that too Arjuna was a warrior. Krishna speaks how soul cannot be killed in the language of a warrior. That's the way in which expert teachers present the subject matter in a way that students can relate with it. See what Krishna says. Nainam chindanti shastrani.
Nainam chindanti shastrani.
Nainam dahati pavakaha.
Nainam dahati pavakaha.
Nachainam kledayantyapo.
Nachainam kledayantyapo.
Nasoshayati marutaha.
Nasoshayati marutaha.
Nainam chindanti shastrani. The soul cannot be cut by weapons. Shastra. Shastras are used to cut people or, you know, harm people. But soul cannot be cut by weapons. Nainam dahati pavakaha. Pavaka means fire. Fire cannot burn the soul. Or fire weapon cannot burn the soul. In this war, people not only use some physical weapons, where the gada is there, or some arrows are there. Okay, you take a physical arrow and then throw at the target, and the target and the person, whoever the person, maybe pierced by the arrow. That's one way. But there are some arrows which are working on mantras. Okay, you invoke the blessings of Lord Shiva, you invoke the blessings of Varuna, Chandra, Vayu, etc. So there is a Vayu Vyastra, for example. You just throw with that mantra, then Vayu will come out of that arrow and that wind will blow away the opponents. Some people will meditate on Agni and Agni will come through that arrow and that will burn the opponents. But the opposite party, if is a good warrior, then he will invoke water in his weapon and the water weapon will counteract this fire weapon. You see? So when Krishna says, Nainam dahati pavakaha, fire cannot burn the soul, means fire weapon cannot burn the soul. You may release a fire weapon, Arjuna, in the war, but don't think that that fire weapon can burn all the souls. No. Nachainam kledayanti apo, the soul cannot be moistened by water. Na soshayati marutaha, the soul cannot be withered by wind. Okay? Then further he says, Achedyoyam adahyoyam.
Achedyoyam adahyoyam.
Akledyososha evacham.
Akledyososha.
Nityah sarvagatah sthanur.
Nityah sarvagatah.
Achaloyam sanatanah.
Achaloyam sanatanah.
Achedyoyam means the soul is unbreakable. Adahyoyam, the soul cannot be burnt. Akledyo, the soul is insoluble in water. Soshya eva, asoshya, soul cannot be dried by wind. Nityaha, the soul is eternal. Sarvagataha, the soul exists everywhere. Sarvagata means the soul is not all pervading like the super soul. Souls exist everywhere. The souls can exist on earth, the souls can exist in water, the souls can exist in fire, the souls can exist in air. For example, there is a soul in fish body also. You go to our Yamuna, you will see a lot of fish. But that fish, if it comes outside and you put that fish on the earth, ground, soul cannot live there. So that soul is meant to live in water. Okay. Means that soul which is conditioned by a fish body is meant to live in water. Oh, souls cannot live in water. Souls can live in water. Water also. Provided they get a body which can sustain in water. We cannot live in water. So, soul exist everywhere, in any country, in any planet, like that. Sarvagataha. Sthanu means unchangeable. Achala, immovable. Sanatanaha, eternally the same. Next. Avyaktoyam achintyoyam avikaryoyam uchyate. Avyakta, the soul is imperceptible. And achintya, soul is inconceivable. Avikara, soul is immutable. Uchyate, that's how it is said. Then, tasmadevam vidityainam, understanding this, knowing all these truths about the soul, my dear Arjuna, nanu shochitum arhasi, you should not grieve for the body. You should not lament for the material body. You are affecting your whatever weapons or anything that you are releasing will affect only the body, not the soul. Body will anyways die. Soul is untouched by anything. So these are the three verses where Krishna gives various qualities of the soul. 24th purport, Prabhupada writes, all these qualifications of the atomic soul definitely prove that the individual soul is eternally the atomic particle of the spirit whole, and he remains the same atom eternally without change. Okay. So we discussed the purports of these verses also while we are discussing the meaning of the verses. Fine. Now 26th shloka.
When it is said that the soul is immutable, that it cannot transform into anything else, is that the right understanding? The soul will remain spiritual always. It cannot mutate into, you know, another existence. What is the use of that word here?
It could be so. Means you cannot stop the activities of soul. You cannot press mute. So soul is active. Of course, the conditioned soul merges into the body of Mahavishnu, and there is mute mode for one night of Brahma or whatever. Mahavishnu Garbhodak Sai Vishnu. Anyways, I think that's an understanding. Next. So far, up to the 25th verse, Krishna presented his opinion and the scriptural conclusion. Why one should not lament for the soul. There's no need for you to lament for the soul. But in the next verse, in the 26th verse, Krishna will present another viewpoint, which is not his own viewpoint, which is not the scriptural conclusion. What is that? Some people do not believe in the existence of soul only. Okay. Even in that case also, there is no reason for you to lament, my dear Arjuna. That's the point that Krishna is making in the 26th verse. Let's read it. Athachainam nitya jatam.
Athachainam nitya jatam.
Nityam vamanyase mritam.
Nityam vamanyase mritam.
Tathapitvam mahabaho.
Tathapitvam mahabaho.
Nainam shochitum arhasi.
Nainam shochitum arhasi.
Athachainam nitya jatam. Even if you think that the soul will be born, nitya jatam means always born. I say that soul is aja, it will not be born. But even if you think that the soul is born, and nityam va manyase mritam, and always be born and die also forever. The soul is born and it will die forever also. Even then, you cannot lament. You don't have to lament. Right? Nainam shochitum arhasi. Because some people, there are some philosophers like Lokayatas and Vaibhashikas. Lokayatas claim that the soul is continually born and continually dies. And Vaibhashikas maintain that the soul is different from the body, but is still subjected to destruction at any moment, at every moment. In both cases, you don't have to lament. Even if the soul is not eternal, it is subjected to destruction. Anyways, it will anyways happen. Why should you lament? So whether you accept the eternality of the soul or not, you don't have a reason to lament, my dear Arjuna. Natvam shochitum arhasi. That's what Krishna says. 27th verse, again he says, Jatasya hidhruvo mrityar.
rajasya hindu
dhruvam janmamrutasya cha
dhruvam janmamrutasya
tasmada parihariyarthe
tasmada parihariyarthe
natvam shochitum arhasi
natvam shochitum arhasi
jatasya hi dhruvo mrutyor. Krishna is coming back to his own opinion. In the 26th verse he said about other doctrines. Now in the 27th verse he is coming back to his own opinion. Jatasya hi dhruvo mrutyor. One who is born is sure to die because of one's own fruitive baggage, karma. Second, dhruvam janma mrutasya cha. After death one is sure to take birth again if he still has karma. If he does not have karma, he will be liberated. But this is about an average conditioned soul. Dhruvam janma mrutasya cha. One who dies, he will take birth again. Tasmad apariharyarthe natvam shochitum arhasi. In this, both are unavoidable. Therefore, while doing your duty, which is inevitable, you should not lament. One who is born is sure to die. One who dies is sure to take birth again. So this is unavoidable, and your duty is also unavoidable. Why are you lamenting? You don't have to lament. Either while performing your duty or while killing those people, you should not lament. Okay? But by avoiding his duty, Arjuna will not be able to stop the death of his relatives. Do you think that if you don't kill all these relatives, they will live forever? What do you think? They will not live. They are sure to die. Prabhupada tells in one lecture, don't think that if you don't kill these people, they will go home. I have already killed all of them. You just take the credit. So, they will not live forever. Birth is basically the combination of Atma with a previously non-existent senses and body. Death is separation of it. Okay. So, the soul, because of its fruitive baggage, will come in contact with a particular combination of senses and material elements in the form of a body. And as soon as that the soul's tenure within that body is finished, when that karma is exhausted, the soul is disconnected from that body. And that will anyways happen. Why should you lament? Some duty is given to you, do it. Okay. 28th shloka. Avyaktadini bhutani vyakta madhyani bharata avyakta nidhanan yeva tatraka paridevana avyaktadini bhutani. Bhuta means this. Bhuta is not ghost here. Bhuta is basically living entity. The living entities are avyakta, invisible in the beginning, before birth. Okay. Then vyakta madhyani bharata, in the interim stage, means during their lifetime, they become visible. Vyakta. Then avyakta nidhani, means after destruction, after death, again they become invisible. Now you are seeing people, interacting with people, but before their birth, in this body, have you ever seen them? No. After their death, will you ever see them? I don't know. No. You are seeing and interacting with them only during this lifetime. That understand. Actually, during this lifetime also, you are interacting through their senses and body only. You have never seen the person actually. What is his original swarupa? You have never seen. A soul has entered the body and made the body animate, and through that animation, that person is interacting with you, and you have never seen the actual person at all in this world. So, there are a few points in the purport. Even when the living entities are not visible, now Krishna said, the soul, the living beings are invisible before birth and invisible after death, and in the interim stage they are visible. That does not mean there is a beginning and end to the living beings. Even when they are not visible, they were existent. According to Sankhya philosophy, these souls existed within the body of either Garbhodaka Sai Vishnu, if it is at the night of Brahma, or in the body of Mahavishnu, if it is the end of life of Brahma. Okay. They existed somewhere, either in sleep mode or in active mode in some other lifetime, they always existed. Okay. And Drishti Srishti, this is called Sankhya. Drishti Srishtivada says, even when the living entities are visible in their middle period, the visibility is also an illusion. Drishti Srishtivada. Sankhya, according to Sankhya, the living entities, when they are not visible, they are still existent. That is clear to you? The living entities, even when they are not visible, they are still existent in the Vishnu's body or in some other lifetime. And Drishti Srishtivada, a theory says, even when the living entities are visible in their interim state or middle state during their lifetime, that visibility is only an illusion. You are not actually seeing the person. For you, the person is a material body with two hands, two legs and a face, two eyes and ears of certain structure, certain complexion, certain facial features, certain height, certain weight, this and that. That is not the person actually. What you are seeing is not the person. That is his body. And the body is a product of the fruitive baggage. Okay? And it is not permanent. Okay? That is only false or illusion or temporary, to be more accurate. Thus, whether you believe in the existence of soul or not, there is no need to lament for the loss of body. Okay. 29th shloka. Ascharyavat pasyati kaschidenam.
Ascharyavat pasyati kaschidenam.
Ascharyavat vadati tathaiva chanyah.
Ascharyavat vadati tathaiva chanyah.
Ascharyavat chaina manyah shrunoti.
Ascharyavat chaina manyah shrunoti.
Shrutvapyenam vedana chaiva kaschit.
Shrutvapyenam vedana chaiva kaschit.
Ascharyavat pasyati kaschidenam. Some see the soul to be amazing, ascharya, astonishing. Ascharyavad vadati. Some speak of the soul as amazing. Ascharyavad chainam anyah srunoti. Some hear about the soul as amazing. Shrutvapi enam vedanachaiva kaschit. Other people, even if they hear also, they cannot know the soul. So this is an amazing verse about the amazing soul. Soul is astonishing. Okay, the soul is atomic. Although it is atomic, invisible, so infinitesimal, still the effect of the soul spreads throughout the body. Throughout the bodies of very microbic entities or gigantic entities. Elephant is there. Maybe few tons heavy, and the ant is there. It's not even weighing half gram also. But soul is there in the ant also, elephant also. Kali Yuga human beings are there, 5 and a half, 6 feet tall. And the previous Yuga human beings are there. They are much stronger and much taller. So the soul is there in both places. Okay. There are whales and sharks in the ocean. They are so huge. They can even make big, big ships and ship and what is the other one called? Boat, ship, something very big. Big boat is ship only? Cruise, whatever. They also will drown because of the sharks and whales. Okay. So, and within that boat, there may be some 10 people, 20 people, 100 people sitting there. Okay. So, we need to, and there is one soul only within the body of the whale also. There are hundreds of souls within that ship. So the soul, but that one minute soul can empower a huge body also. It's amazing. It's difficult to believe. Are in the whale's body, there must be 1,000 souls. If in the ant body there is one soul, in the elephant's body at least there should be 1,000 souls. Otherwise, elephant cannot function. Not like that. It's not that a soul has a specific amount of power. Now you have 4 GB memory slot in your laptop. Okay, it is giving certain speed. For you to generate better performance, you may have to put one more 4 GB slot, 8 GB memory card, or 32 GB memory card. You may have to say all that. Then only you will get certain performance. No. The soul is one. It doesn't have a predetermined capacity. Okay. Amazing, right? That's why this is Ashcharyavat verse. So we completed 29th shloka. Prabhupada writes in the purport in the middle. Illusion by the material energy, people are so engrossed in subject matters for sense gratification, and that they have very little time to understand the question of self-understanding. Even though it is a fact that without this self-understanding, all activities result in ultimate defeat for the struggle for existence. So we should have an understanding of the self. Self-understanding. What are we? That we need to understand. 30th, last verse in this section. Dehi nityam avadhyoyam. Dehe sarvasya bharata.
Dehe sarvasya bharata.
Tasmat sarvani bhutani.
Tasmat sarvani bhutani.
Natvam shochitum arhasi.
Natvam shochitum arhasi.
Dehi nityam. Dehi means one who is in the deha, or the possessor of the deha, the spirit soul. Dehi nityam, the soul is eternal. Fine. Avadhyoyam, vadha means killing. Avadhya means that soul cannot be killed. First line is clear. Next. Dehe sarvasya bharata. This is true in whose case? Every single person. Every single person who is possessing a material body cannot be killed. Only that person's body can be killed. The person cannot be killed. This is true. Okay. Tasmat sarvani bhutani natvam shochitum arhasi. This is true in everybody's case. So, there is no need to lament for any living being. Natvam shochitum arhasi. So, Krishna concluded. How many times he said, don't lament. 30th verse, last line. Natvam shochitum arhasi. Clear? Next. Where else? He said 27th verse, last line. Natvam shochitum arhasi. 26th verse, last line. Nainam shochitum arhasi. 25th verse, last line. Nanu shochitum arhasi. Okay. Then where else? He said 21 is total. There, 21 is not 21. Before that also he says 19, 18, he didn't say that. Nakashchit kartum arhasi. And anyways, 11th verse he definitely said that nanu shochanti panditaha. So at least 5-6 times Krishna is saying it's not worth lamenting. The essence of this 20 verses from 11th verse till 30th verse is just these 2-3 phrases. Number one, material body is perishable. Number two, spirit soul is eternal. Number three, it's not worth lamenting for both. So, do what? Do your duty of fighting. Is it clear? So, Krishna encouraged Arjuna to fight based on Atmagnana, based on the understanding of body and soul. So, if one is steady in this knowledge, he will not be bewildered. Okay. So, these are some verses about the knowledge of soul. Very conclusively, categorically, Krishna is describing this. So, we'll just summarize this section once again. In the 11th verse, Krishna told Arjuna, please do not lament unnecessarily. 12th verse he said, all individual souls existed in the past, present and future. You, me, all these things, everyone existed. The individuality of a person is never lost. 13th verse he said, the changes of this body are natural. Just like one passes from childhood to youthhood and all, changing of the body is very natural. So 14th verse, tolerate these temporary dualities. 15th verse, by tolerating and developing equanimity, you will be eligible for liberation. Fine. From 16th verse onwards, Krishna spoke the characteristics of soul. 16th verse he said, the seers of truth have concluded that body is perishable, soul is eternal. 17th verse, he says soul is indestructible. 18th verse, he compares the material body and spirit soul again. Body is perishable, soul is eternal. 19th verse, soul cannot kill anyone, soul cannot be killed by anyone. 20th verse, he enumerates several qualities of the soul and establishes the eternity of soul again. Then, 21, again he says the same thing, no one can kill the soul. 22, change of bodies is similar to changing of clothes, he gives an example. 23, 24, 25, in these three verses, he gives various qualities of the soul, how soul cannot be killed and how the soul is inexhaustible, immutable, etc., etc. 26th verse, he presents other doctrines. Even if you don't believe in the existence of soul, still you should not lament. 27th verse, he says, this birth-death cycle is inevitable for a conditioned soul. There is no need to lament. 26th verse, he speaks about the visibility and interaction time between different living beings. You are interacting with the person only during one lifetime. Before his birth and after his death, you have no interaction with them. They are not visible to you only. 29th verse he says, the soul is amazing. 30th verse, he summarizes everything. Soul cannot be killed, it is eternal. Body is perishable. Even if you don't kill, someone will kill. So don't lament, just fight. Okay. Shrimad Bhagavad Gita ki jai. Shri Krishna Bhagavan ki jai. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Hare Krishna. Thank you.